Good evening. Welcome to Beijing Diary. Last night I had an interesting conversation with a former colleague of mine who's been spending quite a bit of time over the last year or so riding around China on his bicycle. Let's hear what he has to say about China as viewed from the road.
You've done a lot of biking around China. What did you say, something like 20 provinces you've been in?
How many provinces are there? I calculated I need to go to six more, so yeah, I've been to like 20.
What has impressed you most as you're riding around China?
Impressed me the most? Well, I guess what I enjoyed the most was Xizang, the mountains there. The mountains are so, they're so big and it's so clean there, you know. The air is blue, the sun is intense, the rivers are clean. Forests. You know, I just like, and not a lot of people, you know, I like being out.
But everybody says to go to Tibet, you know, foreigners have to have a permit, but you just rode your bike right in there without any trouble.
That's right. Well, I've been there twice now, and the first time I rode across Tibet, no trouble, and this time I biked in and I had some trouble.
Oh.
I told you about that.
Yeah, that's right.
The police came and woke me up at midnight and told me I couldn't sleep there.
Sleep on the train. But nobody ever checked you for a permit.
No, they didn't. They didn't even check me for a permit. I don't think there is such a thing as a permit. It's a mythical fundraising mechanism.
Actually, what the policy is that technically foreigners are supposed to be part of a tour group and they issue a permit for the tour group.
Yeah, that's true.
But nobody ever sees the permit, so.
Right. Well, they didn't ask me for one either. They just told me that this area of Tibet is restricted to foreigners and you can't sleep here. But I was surprised. They took me to a hotel and then they told me the next day, well, I could keep going as long as I didn't sleep in my tent, and I told the police where I stayed every night.
So you did see quite a bit of Tibet then?
Well, I spent at least a month there. So, and that's a month on a road. That's a lot of seeing.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's the most beautiful place in China. There's this mountains, endless mountains, remote.
Did you go to Mount Everest?
I didn't go that way. I went to the west because I went from Lhasa to Yunnan.
Oh, okay.
So the other way is Mount Everest. My friends, when we split up, and my friends went to Everest, and they thought that was fantastic too. They hiked up to the base camp. And they didn't have a guide either, and they said they met groups with guides, and those groups were giving them a bunch of trouble, like, oh, you don't have a guide, you're exploiting the locals or whatever. They said that was an awesome experience.
Did you bike all the way through to Yunnan then?
Yeah, I biked the whole way.
Man,
I pretty much bicycled almost every foot from Beijing to Lhasa, and then from Lhasa to Yunnan. So the whole route. There's one highway from Beijing to Lhasa, Highway 109. It goes from Beijing to Lhasa. If you look on the map.
Literally all the way through.
I did that whole way.
Man,
all the way. I think the next most surprising thing I saw was not something that, you know, Shaanxi, West Mountains. I've never seen more pollution in my life than there. The sky was black in the daytime. It was like a cloud, but it was black.
Because of the coal.
Because of the coal and the burning of the coal and the transportation of coal. The sides of the road, it looked like it had snowed, but it was black. And over days, you know, well, we couldn't shower every day, and we just became black, and I had these little white eyes, and you see my pictures, you know, this is a black face, black shirt, and we had no idea it was so bad, and I got a mask at one point and was wearing a mask, but...
Well, now, what was this, coal smoke from burning coal, or just coal dust?
It's just like coal dust. I think it's... You know, they transport coal. There was just hundreds and hundreds of trucks of coal. It just spills out, it dumps out, and everywhere there's piles of coal where they leave it, and it's just it's just dust in the air, and it's just like a nuclear winter. And I remember being there and just thinking to myself, this is the, I can't even say what I thought, this is the something of China, you know.
Yeah, they say if the 10 lights on in China, 9 of them are lit by Shaanxi Province.
They also say 8 of the 20 most polluted cities, or the bottom 20, 8 of them are in Shaanxi. 8 out of 10 of the bottom most polluted cities in the world are in Shaanxi. And, you know, I didn't know that when I went there. I did not know that, and it was just getting worse and worse. And I think I shortened my life by 5-10 years. I seriously, I'm going to have lung cancer in a few years here.
Well, I went to the mountains of Shaanxi Province in the fall of 2004, and it wasn't quite as bad in that particular place, but the thing I noticed that everyone in this village was desperately poor, except one guy, and that's the guy that owned the coal mine. Did you see that, some of that economic disparity when you're in
Well, I went up to, you know, I passed some coal mines. The thing about traveling on a bicycle is you really meet the locals. You know, you see the people sitting on the side of the road. You see them sleeping on the side of the road. You know, you set up your tent and you wake up in the morning and you see this guy sleeping around you, you know. It's like, yeah, I do see that. It's quite poor. And now to hear, you know, with you know, all the slavery that's gone on there, you know, I believe that too. I mean, they say there's 1,000, but boy, it's probably a number much bigger than that. And
yeah, that's where a lot of the brick kilns were.
Yeah, we saw the brick kilns. We always wondered what was polluting this particular area. We always saw billowing smoke, and those brick kilns were really polluting. And we always thought, what is that? What is that? Oh, it's a brick kiln. We realized they're making bricks. We never knew.
Yeah, talking about the local people, I mean, you met local people all over China.
Yeah, everywhere.
What was your impression of them generally? Most people friendly?
I always attracted attention everywhere. I mean, I can't even say, well, Beifang, you know, the north part, they're really curious, helpful. A lot of people offered me to stay in their houses. They paid for my meals. They stop at a restaurant, the owner would pay for the meal, and, oh, why don't you stay here for a couple of days? So I had, especially in the north, you know, I had that kind of friendliness. In the west, where I got into Muslim country, they didn't really offer that kind of hospitality, but they were very curious. They'd surround me. I'd often have 25, 50 people, even 100 people just around me watching me eat, watching my sit down. If I start to talk, you know, people might not talk to me, but the moment I like ask a question and they, oh, this guy speaks Chinese, they just surround me. And I feel like, you know, the movie Apocalypse Now, you know, when they surrounded by these local villagers, and then you don't think you can move, but then you start moving and it just parts for you, and then you can push your bicycle through, or you can walk through, or you can go to the store, you know. You're always surrounded at quite close range. Very curious. They love to touch me. They love to touch my arm hair. They love to touch my bicycle. And what's this, you know? There's so some men are really curious about the bike. Oh, look at this technology. And other people curious about the tent or about the...
Yeah, well, speaking of your tent, what percentage of the time did you stay in your tent?
Oh, 95%. I didn't like to stay because I typically didn't sleep well. Even it's quite cheap. Even I only had to pay 10 RMB to sleep, but there's always mosquitoes, or maybe it's just too dirty for me. The toilets were horrendous, you know, dirtiest toilets in the world, I've always felt. I've been to more than 50 countries, and it's certainly the dirtiest.
China is not known for having
clean toilets, you know.
Decorative toilets.
Outside of Beijing, I cycled with this guy from New Zealand, you know. And the first day, he really wanted to stay in a place. And I said, no, no, no. We had just eaten dinner. It was kind of late. And I said, let's just go on, you know, for another 30 minutes and find a place to stay. He said, no, I want to stay in a place. So we got a place for like 15 RMB each, you know. And when he went to the toilet, you know, he came back and he said, "Oh my God, I almost died in there. I tried to hold my breath, but it was impossible, you know." And he never wanted to stay in a place again after that.
It's not a pleasant sight. Some places in the countryside. So you found most people though, local people were pretty friendly.
For the most part, I found them friendly. Ironically, in Tibet or Qinghai or Xizang, I found the most resistance. You know, dislike of foreigners. Let's say. I remember my last trip. I was in Qinghai, some little town. It might have been Garmu, and I was outside of a supermarket and packing up my food, and I attracted a crowd of, you know, probably 30 people, and one guy kind of pushes through and says, "Oh, Americans are bad people." He said it in Chinese, you know, and English are bad people, and Japanese are bad people, you know, and I was kind of irritated, you know, obviously. He just come up and insult me, you know, just Americans are bad, you know. And I asked him if he... I fought back, let's say. Argued with him for a bit, and then...
You said one time some guys tried to rob you?
Yeah, that was in Hebei, actually, outside of... not too far out of Beijing. And I was cycling at night, and I had just passed through a little town at night. And, you know, the town, in the village at night, all the people like hang out at the road. Everywhere in China, especially in eastern China, their social life is just right by the road. They'll play cards, the kids are out there, everyone's sitting near the road. And when you go through the town, you know, everyone's watching what's going on. But I went through at night, and I was hoping I could get through there without being recognized as a foreigner. And I might have, I'm not sure, but I got through the town, and I was heading into a mountain area. I didn't know it, but there was no town for quite a ways. It was a big mountain area, and climb up this hill, and there was no people. And then I decided, well, and it was really dark, so I thought I needed to find a place to tent. I got off my bike looking for a place, and this car came along, zooming up the hill, and zoomed past my bike, braked hard, and reversed back to my bike. And I thought, uh-oh, you know, someone's going to steal my bike, huh? So I ran back to the bike, and I could see they were surprised that I was a foreigner. And, you know, they started to ask me questions like... actually, the first thing they told me was that I hit and killed their dog. And I was, like, really surprised. It's like... and I was thinking to myself, is it possible? And they said, oh, it's a really small dog. And I was going quite fast, and I had bags. And I thought, yeah, but I didn't hear a dog. You know, dogs always, like, let you know they're coming, right?
And, right.
I thought for a sec, you know, is it possible? I hit a dog and killed it. And I just couldn't believe it because I just didn't notice it. But they were saying, yeah, you should give him money. You know, he's so sad, you know. And we're trying to communicate with my limited Chinese, right? And finally, I didn't really believe them, and they were kind of surrounded me, and they were holding my bike, and they wouldn't let me go. And they were also really curious to meet me. Oh, you're an American, right? Oh, China, America, we're friends. They want to shake my hand, you know. And then at the same time, they're asking me for money, and they won't let me go. And after a while, I realized that I didn't hit their dog, and I wasn't going to give them any money, and they're asking me if I had a cell phone, and I wasn't going to get the cell phone out. I just told them after a while, I said, okay, let me go, and they wouldn't let me go, and I said, no, I'm going, you know, and they said, no, you got to go back to the town. I said, no, I'm going, you know, and we did that for like 10 minutes, and finally, you know, I started yelling at them, got angry, and I thought it was kind of funny, because I'm surrounded by 7 guys, but they were all smaller than me. They were kind of teenage kids, and then one kind of leader, older guy, who stood back there. And finally, I just started getting a little bit physical and said, hey, let me go, you know, let me go. And finally, the older guy said, okay, let's go. And then everyone just piled into their car, and they drove off. And I wasn't sure if they were really gone, I mean, I thought they might be coming back, and I jumped on my bike and raced up the mountain and got off the road in a hidden area, and they never came back, so...
Yeah, they were making up a story to get money from me.
They were making up a story to get money, and I think they gave up because I was a foreigner. If I was a Chinese, first of all, the Chinese probably would have given them the money right away.
Maybe, I don't know. But they took advantage of you because you were a foreigner, I think.
Well, in the end, they didn't hurt me. Also, they probably thought there would be repercussions for robbing a foreigner. Or,
mm-hmm.
So.
That's actually quite typical in China. They... you know, physical violence is not that common, but trying to find some way to get you to voluntarily give them money, man, I have more hustles than you can imagine.
Hustles, yeah?
Yeah. It's really quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. You had one situation where you were hiking around and walked into a military camp.
Yeah.
What happened there?
That's in Beijing. I'm a hiker, as you know. I've walked across America a few times and... love the mountains, and there's some mountains east of or west of Beijing, you know, near Shangshan, the fragrant
mm-hmm.
hills, and there's a whole chain of mountains, and there's some old trails, you know. I'm sure those mountains have been used for hundreds of years, and there's trails. There used to be orchards, you know. They're all terraced. Now it's all overgrown, but I mean, it's there's ruins up there too. There's old temples that have been destroyed probably during the Cultural Revolution. I found a lot of temples. And so it's interesting to explore, and I'm always looking for the new way. And one day I decided, okay, I want to go down this chain of mountains, and I want to get over to that big mountain way over there, and that's going to take me all day. So, and it was quite a bushwhack, you know. It wasn't a maintained trail. No one uses it. And, I got to this one mountain where there was kind of a structure on the top. It used to be an old fort or something, an old something maybe the army used, because it's looked like it had gun holes and such. But then from there, the mountain really went, was a kind of a cliff, so I had to find a different way down, you know, a different way down the mountain. And I had to bushwhack quite a ways, and I came out on a road, a new road. And of course, there's no signs or anything, but and I had to choose which way to go. I wasn't even sure which way to go down the road, but I thought, well, okay, that's too much of a bushwhack. I'm just going to get out to a road and find a bus. And so I was walking down this road, and then I kind of came into a little community, and I had no idea that it was, you know, some kind of military area. There was no signs, and they kept saying, well, didn't you see the signs? There wasn't any signs, there wasn't any fence.
You were coming from the back. They probably didn't have that marked, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't marked, but I would think if it was really sensitive, you'd put a fence around it at least, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was walking around in this area, and some car was driving by, and this military man got out and said, hey, you know, he was trying to communicate with me and saying, here, you shouldn't be here, you know, and come with me. And they ended up taking me up to this building, and I attracted a lot of curiosity, probably 10 guys in uniform, and no one could speak English, and they were trying to ask me what was going on. And finally they got in an English speaking guy and asked me what was I doing and do I have a camera. And I just told him, no, I just walked here, no signs, no camera, nothing, just hiking.
Probably a good thing you didn't have your camera that day, huh?
Yeah, well, it's ironic because, you know, I just came back from Tibet last week, and I was stopped by the police there, and they asked me if I have a camera, and I did. So they said they had to look at my pictures, so I looked through all my pictures. And they made me delete every picture of the Qinghai Tibet Railway. and some of the pictures I deleted were in Qinghai. And I said, wait a minute, this is Qinghai. Why is that restricted, you know? And they made me delete them anyway.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting because in Qinghai I saw a lot of military areas where they had rows and rows of tents and rows of military trucks. I was passed by a convoy of military trucks. It was 50 trucks long. And it was quite interesting. I thought I was going to take a picture, and at the time I thought, I better not, because you know what, if someone looks at my pictures, I might get really in trouble, even though it's just off the highway. I didn't take any of those pictures, and luckily so, because when I got stopped in Tibet, those would have been
Oh, yeah.
Red flags for me and create trouble. So
created a lot of attention.
So, yeah, a good thing I didn't have a camera. And
But they let you go, huh?
Well, they called my school and had them come pick me up at midnight, and I don't think the school was too happy about that. All I can say is I hope they built some fences.
Well, they just weren't expecting, you know, backpackers to come climbing, you know. It's just not that
I guess the local peoples know not to go there, you know. But
yeah, and you don't have that many backpackers just hiking out in the hills here like you would in other places.
Yeah, not so much.
You're the only one person I've talked to who stayed in Tokyo for free. How do you handle that? How do you do that?
Oh, well, Yoyogi Koen. Yoyogi Park is right in the center of Tokyo, and there's a lot of homeless people staying there. There's some forests there. I would go set up a tent in the forest area, and no one would even find me. So I slept in luxury there, and I pack up my tent every night, or I even leave it there.
Nobody take it?
Yeah, that's kind of ironic. I would leave it in Tokyo. I'd leave it there all day, and no one would touch it, my stuff or anything. And now, just last week in Beijing, you know, someone stole my tent when I was out of it. So that's another disappointing thing there.
Huh.
Yeah, Japan, the nice thing about Japan is you can pretty much tent anywhere. Any river, any park, any beach. You know, so it's really easy for me to travel in Japan. And it's safe, you know, it's so safe that no one will ever really bother you.
Don't have too many restricted areas for tenting in Japan.
Even the police, you know, sometimes I've had trouble in Japan where I ask the police, you know, I've been out of food and water once, and they take me to the station and feed me and give me drinks and then draw me a map to the river, you know. And they're really kind and helpful. Only a few times I've had trouble. One time in Japan, I arrived by airplane and it was a typhoon was hitting. And I was planning to tent that night and it's pouring rain. And so I just went a little ways out of Narita and I found a wooden area and I set up camp there, and it's just pouring rain. It was terrible. Well, 10 minutes after I got in my tent, spotlight was on my tent, you know, and I looked out and there was at least 10 policemen surrounding me, and they were wondering what I was doing. I just tell them, you know, I just arrived and I just didn't want to cycle in the typhoon, so I was just tending here. And after everything was sorted out, they said, well, you know, you can't camp here next to the airport. but they took me and they put me in their car and drove me to a park and let me off there. So they didn't do anything, just told me they were worried about the security of the airport and they didn't want me tenting there.
You were talking about where's the most beautiful place you've traveled when you were.
I was talking about Australia. I just love Australia. I travel around the coast, and every beach is different. Every beach is, you know, they got real waves, and the waves just create, you know, makes it interesting. They have great beaches, beautiful beaches. There's so many isolated beaches where you're the only one there. I just love that country. Not only the beaches, but it's just the people are friendly, and it's cheap to travel, and lots of hostels, and the flora and fauna, you know, I saw so many different animals, from wallabies and Tasmanian devils and wombats and all the snakes and spiders, and it's just so interesting. The parrots, you know, they have the colored ones, they have the cockatoos, you know, they practically talk to you. They don't talk to you, but you can tell they're smart enough and they'll play with you.
How does China compare to some of the other places on your countries you've how many countries have you bicycled to?
I bicycled in Europe as well, but not the same, you know. I haven't traveled, so I always say 7 countries I've really bicycle toured in. How does China compare? Well,
probably cheaper than most of them, huh?
Well, tenting's always cheap wherever you go. I told you, in Japan, it's quite cheap. Everywhere I tent, so the only cost is really food. Now, the food can be quite cheap in China, yeah. So I can, and if I do need to stay in a place, it's quite cheap. On the other hand, there's always people. Sometimes it's hard to find an isolated tending spot. Even in the countryside, there's always like one guy you're just noticing him standing right there. He's just standing on the side of the, you know, you think you found a spot, it's isolated, and then you know it's at dusk, and then there's that one guy who's just watching you. And it sometimes, you know, there's just so many houses and so many people, you can never find an isolated, a private spot. So that was one frustration. China is quite a diverse country with landscape, you know. You get over to the west and it's deserts and mountains and high mountains and high plains. They got big rivers. They got forested areas. And then in the east, you know, there's a lot of different kinds of people, you know, cities, villages, farming. Mm-hmm. So it's quite diverse. You know, you go south to Yunnan, it's different again. So I would say China is quite diverse.
Mm-hmm.
If you're touring around Japan, Hokkaido really looks the same as Kyushu almost. It's not a lot of variation.
Mm-hmm.
So China is a very diverse country.
I sometimes worry. I worry more about theft here, and worry a little bit more about my safety than in other countries. That's always a little bit on my mind. I really attract attention here more than other places, so I...
More than Japan, too, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, I went to Japan first, like, 20 years ago, and I was kind of, you know, attracting attention, but not like here. Not when you get surrounded by 1,500 people. Even the tourists, like in Shizong or whatever, they... I'll be passed by a car, and I'll see the people in there just shuddering away as they pass me. And they'll drive ahead of me, and they'll stop their car, and they'll set up their tripod, and I'm cycling along, and they're just, or they have their video camera, and they just, I feel like a celebrity, you know. And I've heard cameras as I pass, you know, ching, 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 you know, just like a sports race or something. Even the local tourists will stop and give me water, and the tourists will invite me to their table and, you know, have them join their lunch or dinner, and this is quite common. So I really attract attention here. It's a completely different...
Yeah. Very curious, but generally very friendly.
On the other hand, I sometimes get a bit tired of lack of privacy, you know, it wears on you.
Yeah, there is very little privacy in China.
I got to a point
not
where...
Not a lot of solitude.
When I was like in Qinghai in the Muslims area, it doesn't have to be Muslim, but I mean, I just, at that point, I was so tired of drawing attention, and I'd go into restaurants and I'd tell them, do you have a small room where I can eat? Because if you don't, I'm not going to eat here. I just say, well, if you want me to eat here, you got to give me a private room. And so I went into this restaurant, and at least 20 people follow me into the restaurant, you know, and they don't want to eat, they're just watching me, and I'm asking them, I need a private room, so they said, oh, we got this little small room right here, and I thought, okay, that's good, and it had a curtain, I thought, okay, that's great, so I went in there, and these people just pushed into the room, and it was a real small room, and it was a standing room only, and then they pushed in the room, and there's nothing in there for them to do,
except watch you,
watch me. And I thought it was so funny, because I would look at them, and they'd look away, like, I'm not watching you. I'm standing right next to you in the small room, but I'm not looking at you at all. No one was looking at me, but it was just... So
yeah.
It got tiring in that way. Sometimes I just call them, okay, you guys got to leave. I'm going to eat my lunch. You know.
Oh, this has been very interesting, Michael. I appreciate it. It's good to hear your observations.
Okay, I hope it's clear sound there.
Yeah, I think we did all right.
Okay, a lot of interesting observations there. The little part about slavery there has to do with the brick kilns in Shanxi Province, where people actually kidnapped workers and put them in the brick kilns and locked them in there. Literally held them as slaves, forced them to work many hours, and their families didn't have any idea where they were. It's a horrifying story, actually. Don't have time to talk about it now, but if you go to Google and type in brick kiln and China and slavery, you'll get all the information you need. Let's see. Toilets. Oh my goodness, I don't want to talk about it. You know, since I've come to China, I've thought about I don't know, writing something or talking about that situation, but some of them in the countryside aren't really that bad. They're just primitive. You've got a concrete floor and a hole in the floor, and they'll come through with a bucket of water once in a while and flush it, and then you've got a sort of a small cesspool, and sometimes they'll come through and get the waste for night soil and so on. But there are some places where you've got its own shed in a little village used as a toilet, and it's just it's like a barn. I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. The abject inhumanity of those disgusting filth pits is absolutely indescribable. I don't know. I don't know what else to say. Hopefully that will change. In Beijing, you kind of got both varieties. But you got places like you know, KFC, for example, where you can eat off the floor. They're spotlessly clean. So they're not all that bad in the city, but although there are some that aren't so nice. But boy, in the countryside, sometimes you have some interesting situations. Now, about thieves. I was very interested in Michael's story about the guys who surrounded him and tried to get money out of him. I haven't had anything quite that drastic. Are quite that aggressive, I should say. But it is very believable story if you lived in China. People coming up to you and physically taking your money away, that would be much more rare. But finding a way to pressure you into giving them money, that is actually quite common. And you notice, the way he told it, very mild-mannered guy, but you know, they were obviously using a very aggressive manner. They actually had him wondering whether he had hit their dog. Well, it was ridiculous. I mean, if you ran over a dog on a bicycle, you'd know it, right? So that was a rather aggressive... Now, he said they just happened to be driving by and noticed him. I rather suspect that they saw him going through town and cooked up the plot and came out looking for him. That's my suspicion. Because I've been hit up by a lot of hustlers. Usually they're at the, you know, at the airport or something. They'll just come out of nowhere and, oh, let's see your ticket. I'll help you find your location. One lady was dressed up in a nice blue uniform, just looked like an official representative of an airline or something. And she took my ticket and a passport, actually, and took me to the ticket counter and everything, you know, I just, let me see your ticket. I thought she was a representative of the airline, and then I realized who she was. It's just someone, you know, off the street. And after she had done all this for me, she wanted money. And I said, I'm not going to pay you anything. I didn't ask for your help. Somebody actually takes my passport. That's a serious matter. Now, I've talked to foreigners, actually, who said, oh, this person helped me, show me where the thing was, and I gave him a tip. I said, you shouldn't give them a dime. Now, they're crooks. So there's lots and lots of hustlers out there trying to get money from you. Physically robbing you, that would be rare. I've never talked to anyone who's experienced that. But somehow coercing you into giving them money, that I'm afraid is fairly common. And then, of course, petty thievery, pickpockets, and so on. His story about the military installation was interesting because, you know, in America, you would have... quite strong reinforcements all the way around a military installation. Here in China, you know, they put a gate in front and the backside is to the mountain. You know, they just don't expect someone to be hiking in down a cliff coming into their military installation. they weren't reckoning on someone like Michael. But, you know, the sensitivity in China really has... I mean, the situation has improved enormously. China used to be like North Korea, you know. They wouldn't let you go anywhere without a constant constant surveillance. Someone had to be with you all the time. Now, I can... if you got a visa, you can go anywhere in China. Anywhere. Except Tibet. Tibet, you got to have a permit. Or you're supposed to. As you heard, Michael didn't ever get a permit, and... he told me several places, you know, they'd have an outpost there checking people, and he just kind of rode through on his bicycle and smiled at them and didn't bother them. I think when the backpackers first started to come to China, it caught the country off guard a little bit, because China was opening up, you know, and they built all these resort areas and expecting tourists to come, and then all these kids show up with their backpacks, and they don't want a nice resort, they want to sleep on the ground, you know, so the government's going, what do we do with these kids? So China has developed a network of youth hostels and dormitories that are, it's really quite impressive, especially in Western China. Now, when you travel in Western China, you meet backpackers from all over the world, because students on their summer vacation, you know, they can travel in China. There's just not many places in the world where you can see as much and do as much for as little as you can in China. You mentioned a little bit about Japan. I was curious about, and another comment he made that I thought was interesting. You know, when I asked about the cost of traveling, he said, well, if you get a tent, you know, free is free. So there really isn't much difference between one country or another. the difference would be something like food and so on. But, of course, that assumes that the place you're traveling, it feels comfortable with you pitching a tent just anywhere. So I still say China is quite a bit easier to travel in. But he does have a point. If you like sleeping in a tent every night, you could travel around Japan for very little money. But you know, I don't really like to sleep in a tent that much. I like to have like to be in and out of the rain, so to speak. And so, for someone like myself, the difference is really quite significant. You can't travel across Japan and get a place to stay for a couple bucks, unless it's one of those little pigeonhole post office boxes. I don't know. I'm not even sure what they cost now. China, Western China, really is quite impressive in that respect. Now, if you're in a village, you know, not a place that is real scenic or where backpackers go to, then you're stuck with these village guest houses, and they're not the same as the youth hostels or dormitories. It's 10 yuan a night, but the place is not clean, and last year I stayed in one, and I know in the afternoon I took a nap, and I woke up and my finger was all swollen up. What in the world happened, you know? And that evening when I was going to go to bed, the lady who ran the place, she said, oh, you're going to go to bed now? And she came in and sprayed this chemical around my bed. The most awful stuff. I had to go outside for about 20 minutes, a half hour, to let the place air out. And then I realized what happened. You know, I laid down a nap without spraying that bed, and the bed bugs got me. So you really, in that case, it's almost nicer to be in a tent. But if you get the book and you follow the places where, you know, they have the backpacker type lodges, China is pretty easy. He did tell me once after we got finished talking, he said, oh, just remember one more story. And he told me about a situation where he was in a village and went to one of these little shower houses. And in rural China, if you got a small village and they don't have a hotel, or they have a hotel but it doesn't have a shower, or they have a hotel with a shower but the shower isn't working, or the shower is working but for some reason the water turned off, or any one of those things, which you'll encounter all of those in rural China, in the countryside. You've got these places where you can go and pay 3 yuan and take a shower. And he said he went there and gave the guy 3 yuan, and the guy said, okay, you can take your shower now. And there was a little shower room, and the guy just stood there and watched him while he took his whole shower. And when he told me that, I said, well, you know, it's interesting you tell me that, because I had the same experience last summer. I was in a little village. I was in the county town, so it was the plush hotel for the county, but I mean, it was a rat hole place, and it had a bathroom and a shower, but of course the shower didn't work. And so I went to a little shower house in early morning and paid the guy 3 kwai, and he said, oh, you can take your shower now, and he just stood there, and I'm like, you can leave now. You know, I didn't say that, but you know, I just sort of ushered him out. But after hearing Michael's story, I think he probably did want to stand there and watch me take my whole shower. You know, what kind of person would expect you to take a shower right in front of them while they're standing there watching you? And it's not really voyeurism, I don't think. It's really more of a, I don't know, extreme cultural deprivation. Or just unusual curiosity, senseless curiosity. I don't know. It's quite interesting, but an interesting conversation there. And there's some things you just can't gather. I should put it the other way. There are certain kinds of information that you can get a lot better if you're walking or biking or you know, meeting people, you know, as we say, where the rubber meets the road. So very, very interesting. I ride a bike around the community here, but I haven't done the cross-country sort of stuff. I've thought about hitchhiking, but you know, in China, it's not like United States. I hitchhiked across the United States after I got out of high school. But hitchhiking is built into American culture. It's a product of the Depression and so on. In China, if you stick your thumb out, stand out in the road and stick your thumb out, they'll stop, all right, but they're going to see dollar signs, and they're going to be looking for money, and you'd be better off just taking a bus. Okay, well, lots of stuff to think about and so on. So we'll call it an evening. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. This podcast is hosted online at beijingdiary.podbean.com. That's beijingdiary.podbean.com.